it's a brand new day. We're on the wheels of an angel flying away. And the sun is shining, and the distant road keeps winding through the prettiest country from Georgia to Tennessee. And I got the one I love beside me, my trouble. Across her pretty knees, she's stomping out a rhythm and singing to me the sweetest song. The sun is shining, and as the road keeps winding through the prettiest country from Georgia to Tennessee. And I got the one I love beside.
It is 9:09. You're listening to 100.5 FM. Good morning. I'm Ray Richardson. Thanks for joining us. As I often say around here, the breaks are far more interesting than the actual show. I wish we could have broadcasted the break and not broadcast the show because you'd have learned a lot. But it doesn't work out that way, does it, Jeff Timberlake? Dove Sachs is here, the founder of Independence Law Maine, Jeff Timberlake. Senator Jeff Timberlake out of Turner, former Senate Republican leader. Dr. Claude Barraby with a PhD.
Dr. Commander.
Dr. Commander, forgive me for that. How dare I? How dare I? How dare I? It's all crazy. All crazy. So joining us on the line is one of my favorite people in the whole world. She's absolutely amazing. She's stunningly beautiful, incredibly smart, and unbelievably articulate. It's just great. She's a warrior. Well, yeah, of course, Dee Dee. She knows Dee Dee. She loves Dee Dee. Dee Dee loves her. Her name is Janiah Thomas. She is head of Black Media Affairs for the Donald Trump campaign. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are y'all?
We're good. We're good. Hey. You like that introduction? I thought it was swell.
That's very nice.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. So, nothing going on at all. How's it going? What'd you have for breakfast this morning?
I haven't gotten that far yet. I'm doing my makeup currently.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what did you think about last night with Bret Baier and Vice President Harris?
I mean, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, continues to embarrass herself. You know, she's can't answer a question directly. And I think, you know, she's proving our point even further. You know, she's not a strong candidate. She's not a likable candidate. And, you know, she even said herself that, you know, you have to take responsibility for the things, you know, happening in your administration. Yeah. That, you know, you've been in office for 3.5 years, you know, do something now.
So you're the Vice President of the United States of America, which means you're one heartbeat from being the president. You served with the president who chose you. According to the President of the United States of America, Joe Biden, there is not a music sheet of paper between the two of you on policy. And you have gone on to say on public forums that you wouldn't have changed anything Joe Biden has done. And you've also said, I was often the last person in the room with Joe Biden when big decisions were made. And yet somehow or another, every time Bret Baier asked her a question about policy decisions made, Donald Trump is the Antichrist. That made no sense to me.
Yeah, I know she spent more time talking about, you know, her hatred for Donald Trump and not talking about what she can do or wants to do for people. It's very sad. It's clearly, you know, they press her on hating Donald Trump. That's all she's good at is, you know, promoting, you know, fake news about Donald Trump.
I think it did come out last night. She does actually loathe him. She hates him. I think that you can't speak about someone in the manner in which she spoke about him so consistently about every question asked if you don't loathe him.
I think she'd be better if she loathed him. I don't think she actually does. I think she just is all in on that. That's the message. That's her role. That's her script. Because even that's inauthentic.
You think she's that smart?
She's not coming across as actually hating him, which maybe that would work better if she genuinely feared him and thought he was Hitler. But she clearly doesn't. It's a shtick. It falls flat. We know Trump now. He was president already. The American people are seeing it. And that's why it feels good. The question is, though,
you give her a lot of credit that I don't give her.
You know, if they're feeling this way, and they're seeing the tea leaves, and there are signs that they're seeing the tea leaves nationally, then, you know, if they do, and many of them do believe he's Hitler, and they don't have the firm guardrails of, say, you know, the Bible and faith and those things that they tend to not endorse, why wouldn't they go to great lengths to cheat and go to...
Or worse, if he was Hitler, I mean, we all know what a bad dude that dude was, right? And there's the old question, and again, as a Christian, I'm pro-life, and I believe everyone, including Adolf Hitler, if he chose Jesus Christ at the last moment of his life, was redeemable. But if you're a secular person and you really believe Donald Trump is Hitler, and we know what a bad dude Hitler was...
Then they should cheat.
Would
right?
there be worse? Well, worse than cheating, maybe.
But if it would be cowardly if you don't have an inherent morality, but it's greater good logic, and you think he's Hitler, then it would be cowardly not to cheat. And that's kind of the logic that I've seen, and that's what has me very concerned, because I think a lot of them mean well in their minds, but they have a greater good logic. They don't have guardrails of
morality and decency.
Of not an inherent one. They have a relativist one. And so if you think someone's Hitler, like they're conditioned to, then all bets are off. I think one of the most important things...
I just have one question while you're saying that.
Yeah.
We all know that Hitler killed 6 million Jews, Gypsies, and Poles. And we know that probably close to 30 million people died because of his overall efforts, because of what happened in Russia. Who has Donald Trump killed? Janiyah, do you know who Donald Trump has killed? Has he killed anybody that we're aware of?
No, no one that I'm aware of.
So 30 million people died as a result of Adolf Hitler's actions back in the 30s and 40s. Donald Trump has killed no one.
How first president in 82 years not to start a war.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, he quotes, you know, Book of Matthew, blessed are the peacemakers, in his speeches all the time. He leans into that, mm-hmm. you know, and they make him into this monster. But they believe he's a monster, and they have a relativist morality. So the real question is, I mean, unless they're cowards, they are doing whatever they, you know, by any means necessary is a very leftist
logic. Well, they have a
leftist
secular morality, which means they have no morality at all. That's what I see it as. Jenna, I want to ask you something. As you know, Barack Hussein Obama, the first black president of the United States of America, has been scolding black men about their unwillingness to vote for Vice President Harris. What are you hearing as you're out traveling in those circles?
I mean, look, I think Obama was very, you know, out of touch with, you know, trying to scold black men into voting for Kamala Harris, you know. I think he is a millionaire, you know, Netflix producer, and then it's kind of, you know, out of touch to go into, you know, black communities and telling people how they should think and how they should vote. You know, I don't think it resonated well. I think it caused a lot more harm than good. And I think it's, you know, pointed out, you know, even more of how these people are trying to brainwash, you know, minority communities. But what I've seen, I was just in Atlanta with the president the other day, and, you know, the momentum is there. Everyone is super excited to vote for President Trump. I've seen more minorities showing up at our rallies lately, and, you know, it's cool to just see that many people just excited to just hear his message and, you know, be a part of the movement.
Do you know Michaela Montgomery? I said Murphy earlier. She's a judge here in Maine. Do you know Michaela Montgomery at all?
Yes, me and Michaela are very good friends.
What's that?
I said me and Michaela are very good friends.
Yeah, she's a fireball. I mean, you're very calm and very respectful. She's a fireball, but she was in Fuego the other day down in Atlanta, I think it was, when she was calling out Barack Obama, saying basically the only time he's cared about black men is if they're dead or gay. I thought that was interesting.
I mean, she's not wrong.
She's not wrong.
I mean, I think Obama, Obama did more for the LGBTQ community than he did for, you know, Black Americans, and then now he's going to go back to Black people and tell them how they're supposed to vote. That's very, very out of touch.
Yeah, it just seems to me, and I, one of my dearest friends in the world who's no longer with us was a man by the name of Reggie Washby. He served in the United States Army for 15 or 16 years, served in Vietnam, and he was a Black man. He happened to be a Black man, which is how I usually say it, that, you know, I don't want to identify him as a Black man. He happened to be a Black man who was a dear friend, and one of the things, he was a great political ally, and when I was head of the chamber, we used to have chamber breakfasts where we would invite people in who were running for office, and the head of the Democratic Party in the state of Maine at the time was at this event, and she walked over to him in my presence and said, "You should be," she was a white woman, "you should be ashamed of yourself, a Black man who's a conservative." And I just thought to myself, I thought we ended the plantation mentality in 1865, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I mean, I think it's, you know, a lot of Colin's base are a lot of white liberal people telling Black people how they should think. And that, you know, acting as if we need somebody to, you know, guide us in the right direction. And it's very rude. It's, you know, kind of disgusting for people to think that what they, you know, their political opinions is what's best for us. You know, I think it's very, you know, disrespectful to not think that Black people are able to think for themselves and come to their own political decisions, you know. But I think, you know, going forward, we're seeing a lot of people wake up and, you know, wanting to think for themselves and make decisions based off of the principles and priorities that matter to them and their families.
One of the things Michaela Murphy pointed, not Murphy, forgive me, I said it again, Michaela Montgomery pointed out was, is there are white women, white men, Asian men, Hispanic men, Hispanic women, and Black men who don't want to vote for Vice President Harris, but for some reason Barack Obama decided to single out Black men, and she thought that was despicable. It just seems bizarre to me that he did what he did. I listened to him, and I thought he was condescending, and I'm not Black.
No, I think it was very condescending. And I'll also say that, you know, I agree with Michaela, there is, like, other minorities, but I think that they think it's easier to guilt-trip Black people into voting for her. And I think that, you know, they're saying things like, you know, you hate your mom or you hate your sister if you don't vote for Kamala. And it's like, Black men are not voting based off of all this emotional rhetoric and race-baiting rhetoric that they're trying to use. I think that more people are looking at the facts, looking at and thinking logically about this election. And it is that whole conversation with Obama was very, very condescending to Black men.
Yeah, it's just all crazy. We got to stop all this black, white, red, yellow, green, purple, pink stuff. Yep. Let's get back to being red, white, and blue Americans is what we got to do. It's just so crazy. Is your job getting tougher right now? I know you're head of Black Media Affairs for President Trump. Is it getting tougher now? Charlemagne the God had Harris on the other day. I don't know that he's invited Trump. Is he going to invite Trump if he hasn't? Do you have any idea?
I'm not sure. I think I've heard clips of him saying that he was interested. But, I mean, I think, you know, that interview he did with Kamala was very, like, a softball interview. I think he, you know, there was no visual aspect of it, so, you know, people can't tell, look at her face while she's lying. And I think that, you know, they just are using people that they know, like the Roland Martins, the Charlemagne, to, you know, make her comfortable and give her these, you know, softball interviews to try to make her look better, and she can't even do that right.
Yeah, just crazy.
So the job, I will say the job is definitely getting harder. It's definitely getting harder as we get closer to Election Day. But, you know, we're still, you know, trucking ahead and doing the best that we can. And I think that, you know, the job's getting harder, but they're also making it easier by making her look so foolish.
Yeah, last night was an absolute disaster for her. It was just unbelievable. Hey, by the way, Pastor Zoe from Detroit is going to be on. He and I become very close over the last 3 months, and he's going to be on next Friday. And, man, has he had a lot to say recently. I mean, he's I love that guy so much. His story, his life story, as you know, Janaya, is just an incredible life story.
Yes, Pastor Zoe is great. I saw him, I think, about in the last 3 weeks in Detroit recently at an event we did with Black pastors in Detroit, and he's great as usual.
Yeah. Just amazing. We are coming down for the inauguration. We're going to broadcast it again as we did 8 years ago, and he said President Trump has reached out to him about maybe saying a prayer, which I thought was wonderful because He is just, he's, I mean, his story is so incredible. As you know, his father's in prison for murder. He, as he said to me in Milwaukee, he became a street pharmacist, which I had to pause for a moment to figure that one out. And then I realized he was talking about a drug dealer and that he was down in Daytona, Florida, one of my old stomping grounds, and he was hopped up on meth and amphetamines and marijuana and all kinds of stuff. And he said a security guard recognized that he was in great crisis, and he walked over to him, and he didn't invite him to church, and he didn't preach at him. He just said, "Can I pray with you?" And Zoe said, "Okay." And from that moment to this, his life has been transformed, and he is a powerful advocate, not only for Jesus Christ, but the traditional values that have made this country great.
Yes, I think Pastor Zoe's doing a great job, you know, especially in Detroit, you know, spreading our message and, you know, getting into his congregations and others and, you know, communities of color, you know, talking about, you know, why President Trump is the best candidate for all of us. He's been one of the strongest voices by far. I'm very, very, you know, glad we have him, like, as a surrogate out there.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but I want to invite you to an event on Tuesday night. I know you're not going to be anywhere else on Tuesday night, November 5th. You're obviously going to come to Portland, Maine. I get that. But on Tuesday night, November the 5th, we are going to have a replication of our victory party from 8 years ago at the Regency Hotel. We'll have really, really good food, a lot of fun, and you're invited. I know you probably are going to be down in West Palm hanging out with the friends, but, you know, if you decide to come up here, you can come on up. We would love to have you. So just extending the invitation.
I appreciate the invitation for sure.
But I realize you're going to go where the real fun is, where the president is. I get that. I get that. I understand.
Yeah,
that.
I haven't honestly thought that far to election day. You know, we're taking it, you know, one day at a time here.
I know. No doubt. But we are 19 days out, which... So exciting. Can't wait for November 6th. I can tell you that. Can't wait. Janiyah, as always, great to have you on. We look forward to talking with you next Thursday. Thank you.
Yes. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Janiyah Thomas, head of Black Media Affairs for President Trump. So, gentlemen, what do you think?
I think that Tesla drivers who are voting for Harris have a moral quandary right now. And I saw Justin Bateman yesterday, the actor. He said that he feels like driving his Tesla was a Trump sticker because of Elon's support, which has now been so out there. So I think he's right about that. I think it's very hypocritical for Harris voters to, you know, given their stances on these things, to continue driving their Teslas. So
I had not expected you to go there, but I think that's a brilliant, brilliant conclusion.
But I hear they're really nice driving car. Never sat in one in my life, but I hear they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm a lot more interested in them now.
I just want to drive one of his spaceships because I think that'd be really cool, you know.
Well, but, Commander, make it so.
But isn't that just fascinating? So many people, you know, consciously or subconsciously, bought the Teslas because it was virtue signaling about their eco stance and way of life. And now they find themselves driving around in what, admittedly, Justin Bateman said feels like a Trump poster, and he got rid of his Tesla because of it. And I think that's
he got rid of it.
Wow, he said he got rid of it.
Well,
and that's honorable. And I think all Tesla drivers voting for Harris should strongly consider that. And if you're not, I ask you, why not? Or do you think it's ethical to continue driving that
Tesla?
Did
he get rid of his American flag too? Because, you know, that's now a symbol of Trump.
I told you that last time I was on here, right? I had just moved back here in Maine, and I have an American flag out in front of my house.
As do I.
And an old friend, much older than I, she came over to stop by and visit and say hello. And she says, "Why do you have a MAGA flag outside of your house?" I was like, "What? I don't. I don't have a Donald Trump flag or anything." She goes, "No, that flag over there." I was like, "You mean the American flag?"
Wow.
And she was absolutely serious. I said, "Look, I served. I woke up every morning. I was at, you know, colors." And I said, "That's an American flag. Just please."
Yeah. Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. If that one floored me, it really did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've been an independent for 30 years, and I just want to make things go. I want to make things happen. I want fiscal responsibility out of my government. I want security to be able to do the things that I want to do, and freedom of speech, you know, all the basics. And that's all. I don't want bells and whistles, and just let it happen.
So are you still an independent?
There it is.
Because if you don't stand for something, you don't stand for nothing.
Ooh.
Wow. Well, whoa. I don't stand for nothing. I don't.
You know what I stand for? What? The American flag.
Every time.
That's true.
Every single time.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing that struck me. You know, I saw this video of the Portland City Council. Look, we shouldn't be forced to do anything. But gosh darn it, if you're going to be serving on the city council and three of the city councilors are sitting down during the Pledge of Allegiance, I don't understand. Okay, fine, you don't want to do that. Then why be involved in a government and what it represents?
That flag represents. You know what I see that flag?
Oh, wait, that's why I say, and I put this out every year on Twitter/X. There was a 30-minute short story, James Clavell's short story called The Children's Story. It only appeared on television once, and I want to say it was 79 or 80. It was so indelibly in my memory. But in the course of that, the other side, quote unquote, has taken over. And what this new teacher does, this new communist teacher, is minute by minute removes the rights of students and takes apart by the end of the class the American flag itself and cuts it up into little pieces. And look, I just don't see that. That's why I think that children's story is so important, because it's become in some ways reality.
You know what I see when I see that flag, and it's been in the studio for over 20 years, is I look at it and I see hope. And I think that that's what most people around the world see when they see that flag. They see hope. They see the opportunity that freedom and self-determination actually exist wherever that flag waves. And they know that if they come to this country and live on this soil, somehow that opportunity will be afforded to them. I don't see MAGA. I don't see Trump. I don't see Harris. I don't see Biden. I don't see George Washington. You know, who, if anybody, would symbolize the
flag. Represents everybody who wants to participate in this process.
But the thing that's next level about MAGA as a slogan, as Reagan knew and now Trump knows, is that it interweaves it with the flag. So you actually do see MAGA, and that's why the Democrats aren't flying their flags anymore. And so that's the reality of where we are. I don't see any philosophy. But I know my point was that
all I see is freedom.
I just said Democrats do.
You and I had the same words, right? I was when I look at that flag, and I'm 66 years old now, and
Wow, you're old. Holy cow. Yes, I am.
I thank you for your service, and I didn't serve in the military, but I've been part of local government and state government, and when I see that flag and I see the things that I've witnessed throughout my life, and I can remember the day that JFK was shot. I was home with the chicken pox, and as a young kid, I can remember that day, and I can remember the flags then and them draping the coffin with it. And that flag to me stands for freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's all it's ever really stood for. It's freedom. It's the people of this country, whether I agree with them or whether I don't, having a right to voice their opinion. And I will defend somebody's right to disagree with me forever and ever.
Amen.
That's a great point. That flag draped the coffins of my father, who served in World War II, and my mother, who served in the legislature for 30 years. It represents more than a political party, more than an individual. It represents the idea of America. And that's not any kind of extremist belief. No, there are basic ideals and opportunities that this country has provided that you can go to. I've been around the world. I've been very fortunate to go to a lot of places that, you know, some places are pretty nice. Some places are really not nice. And there's no place in the world that provides the opportunities. And that's why I said earlier this morning, if Elon Musk has to go somewhere, where does he go? where do business leaders go? Where do other people go if not here? Because anybody has an opportunity here.
Why did 11 million people come across the border illegally? I believe the overwhelming vast majority of them were fleeing the hellhole they were in, and yearning for what I yearn for every day, the right to breathe free and to self-determine. And that's what that flag symbolizes for me, and I think it does for probably 300 of the 340 million who reside on our soil.
I totally agree with you. I mean, the people that are coming across the border, whether we agree about the way they come across the border or not, is right. I think that's the argument. But I believe that 99.9% of the people that are crossing that border are coming to the United States to make a better life for them and their family.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that.
What percentage did you say?
I said 99.9%. You know,
I think that's high.
Yeah, well, you and I can agree to disagree.
Well, what 99.9?
Because I think that almost every single one of them are crossing to find a better life. Mm-hmm. Now, whether the way they find it is the right way to find it or not.
But have you not been paying attention to the news about the drug cartels and the trafficking and the 325?
They're still after a better life when they get here.
There's a whole criminal operation
now. I agree with you.
There
is a whole criminal. Well, no, I think it is because they're seeing a market. Whether it's a good market
drug
or
cartels?
A bad market. Sure, it's a market. It's how
okay,
they get their
exactly.
Product,
so that's not about people coming for a better life?
And people are dragging their drugs across the border because it's their only way they can get here. They're being blackmailed. They're being pushed. They're being everything they can to find a way to get here. And the drug cartels are using them to line their pockets. But no matter what you do at the end of the day, the majority of people coming to the United States of America are looking for a better life once they get
here. And the criminal marijuana operations in Maine, that's looking for a better life in a way, but it's not the, you know, that's not how we're going to categorize it when we're talking about what we're looking for. So it's you know, and what I was saying about the flag is of course I agree with everything you were saying, freedom, but then it also it's not just freedom, it's also America. It's the American flag, like Claude pointed out, that it represents America. So my point is, we have a movement now, Make America Great Again. And that's why I said it's interwoven. And you have the Democrats saying MAGA, Make America Great Again, is somehow extremist and crazy. And the psychology is just what I'm pointing out. It's why Democrats are not flying American flags anymore. Because in their eyes, it's MAGA. But all MAGA is Make America Great Again. So I'm not making any controversial point. I'm just describing the reality of why now, for the first time in American history, if you see a proudly flown American flag, 8 to 9 out of 10, that's not a Democrat. That's just, they've taken it down. And that's why that woman, Claude, came to your door and was absurd. And that's the crazy culture and place that we are now as a country. And what happens then if you educate kids in a culture where you're afraid to fly the American flag? That's that now we're getting at why everything's a real mess on a psychological level right now. But you know, we can't shy away from the difficult discussion about how half the country is now viewing the American flag.
Well, Ronald Reagan said it best, January the 11th, 1989, his farewell address to the country. He said the people of the Reagan Revolution did not bide their time. They made a difference. They brought back patriotism. But what they didn't do was institutionalize it like it used to be. Patriotism used to be a given. That was the default position. It is no longer, and I think that's the point that you're making, Dove, is that patriotism is no longer the default position of the country.
The ethos of the Democrat Party is that America primarily and fundamentally is inherently racist and needs to be radically reconstructed.
And again,
that's not pride in country.
And why is that? Because they're projecting who they are. Their DNA is what you said. Well, they're the ones that enslaved people.
I didn't say DNA.
No, I'm saying it. They're the ones that enslaved people. They're the ones that seceded over slavery. And then when they got their butts kicked, they're the ones that created segregation. And now when that failed, they're moving us to socialism. The DNA of the upper echelon leadership of the Democratic Party has always been about evil. Socialism is evil. Segregation is evil. Secession was evil. Slavery was evil. It is the DNA of the Democratic Party of this country. Now, that doesn't mean all Democrats are racist and slave owners, but they have allowed the co-opting of their party by people who are.
The globalist enterprise that was transcendent until Trump recognizes the tremendous obstacle that the United States as a country, what it represents, is to their enterprise. And that's why what we have now is this leaning into America on the one hand, and the other hand, what's really an effort to bring it down at its, you know, in terms of its principles, the individual liberty, the what it represents, the freedom that Jeff was talking about. And that's what, right. what's really on the ballot, because...
But what are those four things that I just talked about all about? They have one word in common. Hmm. What is that word? Control. They want to control. Slavery is about control of a human being. Secession, my God, it was about controlling the right to control people. Segregation is about control, telling one group of people they aren't worthy of associating with another group. And socialism is about a control of a cancer that exists in us that will consume us if we allow it. That's what this is all about. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The modern Republican Party is about empowering individuals. The modern Democratic Party is about empowering the government. And if you need an example of it, Janet Mills, the governor of Maine, is the best example. She has not empowered the people. Our workforce participation rate in the state of Maine is 59.3%. Any economist worth their salt will tell you the economy can't work if it's not at least at 62%. Incomes are down. Poverty is up. She has harmed Maine with her socialistic attitude.
Yeah, I think that's reflected in the composition of the Maine House and Senate. About it, I think it was last summer, I just did a study, just because that's what I do did as a professor, of the what people did for work, their occupations, and I broke it down: House and Senate, and Republican and Democrat, and pretty decent percentage of people who own businesses like you. On the Republican side, but very few on the Democratic side. So you're going to get this divergence of views of what you see as policies when you have people who haven't actually tried to run a business. I've done it a couple of times. I have an LLC now. And when you start to understand what it takes, yeah, right. I'm rich because I live in Maine now and among this beautiful land and
you're
great
my friend.
People.
That makes you very
and we're
rich.
Friends. I am yes, very rich. What is it Clarence said? No man is poor who has no friends or
right.
something like that.
Exactly.
But to understand what it takes to run even a very small one-person or two-person business, the taxes you have to do, the paperwork you have to do, the regulations you have to go through, I would encourage anybody who runs for office just to go through that process. And then you understand the difficulties inherent in that before you even start the business and start to try to bring in income. Then it gives you a different perspective of, and apologize, you probably know this better than I do, Senator, what that impact has, what every piece of legislation has on the things that drive an economy.
And what do they all have in common? This is the point that I wish everyone would get. Every single one of those things you just mentioned are about one word, and that word is control. Every bit of it is about the government controlling every aspect, which is what I'm against. I'm not against our government. I believe our Constitution, other than the Bible, is the second most consequential document ever written. I believe we have poor executioners of our Constitution. The Constitution is a document of liberation. It limits the powers of government. But instead, what we have now is this never-ending river of people who want to control. And everything you just brought up was about control. If you overtax, you control the flow of money. If you overregulate, you control the ability of people to do as they well please, as long as they're not harming someone else.
And that's
about control.
That's the primary difference between our Constitution and when the Soviet Union existed, and I was a Soviet studies minor in college. So I sort of speak from some experience on this. But when you read the Soviet Constitution, it was all about protecting the government from the people, whereas the United States Constitution is protecting the individual from by having restrictions on the government.
Right. Gentlemen, I hate to do this because I am loving every moment of this, but we have to break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Joshua Morris, State Representative from Turner. I'm running for re-election this year for the towns of Turner, Leeds, and Wayne. One of the reasons I am running is because of the state budget is projected to have a $1 billion shortfall in the next biennium. This is due to overspending from Maine Democrats in the